Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Actually Comics for Wednesday, October the 3rd. Yeah, I know. It's really late. But a great time for comics.
Yes.
There's some really, really fun stuff that we're going to go through. We got tons of number ones and some continuing things from series that we were really excited about the last time around. Sorry I was out last week. You can still hear the remnants of my terrible cold. It's still sticking around a little bit. Sorry about that. There may be a little bit of sniffling in here. Apologies.
Well, it's not like any big comics came out last week anyway.
Stupid comics last week.
But there are a lot of, if you're a fan of a lot of comics, then this is your week because there's a lot of comics. So shall we just get the ball rolling?
Yeah, I want to start with this one because this is one that really surprised me. Would not normally have been something, even though it's named after an awesome 70s horror comic that I very much love, I'm surprised that I was into this iteration. I am, of course, talking about Wonder Woman and Justice League Dark, The Witching Hour. This book was great.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Awesome.
Super fun.
Really, really fun book. It's probably the most fun Justice League I've read in a very long time. I can't wait to read the rest of it. Great Wonder Woman stuff. There's all sorts of little, like, you know, Swamp Thing is huge in it. It's got all sorts of characters that I really like. Detective Chimp is in it a lot, which pleases me to no end.
Yeah, this was so basically just like a little bit of extra background. I did pick this up because I was curious. It's a first issue of a ongoing storyline that spins out of the Justice League Dark series, which is brand new, and I'm surprised they already have a crossover. But it's the Justice League, but then also the characters from the Justice League Dark, and it's all Hecate, the DC version of Hecate, and it's all this witching thing that's going on, and also the Man-Bat version that is in Justice League Dark. I just have to shout out the Kirk Langstrom Man-Bat. Has like two panels of screen time, but like put him in an entire comic. Like, so good. Like, love what they did with that character.
He is definitely the standout from this whole series.
And this is James.
Really stoked on him, too.
For sure, yeah. James Tynion and Jesus Marino. Jesus. Sorry.
Sure.
Jesus.
Jesus, Bob.
Yeah, I suck at pronunciations.
Okay, so next one that I was also very excited about, not a new number one, but Border Town.
My favorite.
Man, Border Town. This book is very, very fun. This is the direction I'd been hoping it was going to go in from the first issue. It didn't give us a whole lot to go on. You didn't really know what was gonna be the direction. And this is sort of, I guess you could call it kind of an origin story for the Mascador, for the Lucha guy.
Yeah, like a lot of I think he got the biggest spotlight.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a setting issue that kind of just introduces you to a lot of there's a relatively large cast, although not like completely off the wall. It's like five like kind of central characters and then the big threat, so a kind of a pacing issue, but really, really good, and the art is so good, and there's like this, I mean, I don't know, just after a couple issues more are out, we could talk more about like the characters we like and things like more specifically that are less spoilery. But
what's important is that there is the one big spoiler that is really important is that there is a good chupacabra in this, and they do become friends, and they are taking care of him and keeping him away from all of the evil demons. So come on.
Yeah.
You know you're on board.
Yeah. And I would also just like, for art wise, Frank Quitely doesn't do a lot of stuff. He's not on the art on this, but I think that the artist Ramon Villalobos almost kind of channels that Frank Quitely-esque-ness of art, and it kind of scratches that itch for me.
I agree.
I really dig the art, but I also just, the story is really compelling and cool and strong. Like it.
Yes.
Good.
Speaking of strong, compelling stories, oh my God.
The most.
Cosmic Ghost Rider number 4 is out. Jeez, guys.
Yeah.
This book is so good. Oh my God. Every single time you think you know where it's going, where you're like, oh, you know, okay, so it's just going to keep being wacky, and then they're just going to keep throwing out weird stuff, and then it takes a big left turn like it did on this one, and it makes a really, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a quiet issue, but it's a very heartfelt thing, and it's like now a father and son story between him and Thanos as the Punisher, and it's like, the idea of him trying to do what Frank Castle would have wanted, and then how it turns out that he's just trying to make his dad happy, and it's just, it's sad and awesome, and like, oh my God.
Like the theme of Ghost Rider trying to re-raise Thanos from a kid, and then with this idea of like hopefulness, and then of course like what of course
the Watcher what the
end
said.
Result of yeah every Thanos possible iteration. Great. The art was really good.
Sweet.
That was a good comic. Umbrella Academy, number one. We'll dip into our massive stack of number ones. Gerard Way and Gabriel Ba. It's the third Umbrella Academy series. I love this series, although it's been a really long time and a lot of the details aren't super fresh. This just kind of gets you acquainted with who's around after the end of the last series and starts a new kind of like super science meets superheroes meets maybe like a Venture Brothers kind of feel for a modern Touchstone, like a family of adventurers, but very strange family. One of them is a half ape called Space Boy, and it's a really fun series. If you've never read them, I would definitely not want to read this one first. But
it doesn't even really have any kind of lead up to it whatsoever. So
no, there's no recap or
so
anything.
You should probably read the trades. We have all the trades if you want to get into it.
Cool.
We have them at the store. We have bajillions of copies of both of them. So
nice. Yeah, I would highly recommend both those, and definitely starting at that point if you haven't.
And also, speaking of things everyone should freak out about, holy Christ, guys, Sam Keith is doing a new Max comic right now, right this second. There's a new Max comic done entirely by Sam Keith.
It also has Batman.
Batman's in it. Batman is superfluous. It doesn't matter.
He really is. I mean, and if you like, yeah, like
this is a Max comic that just happens to have Batman to kind of get a new audience involved, which is all that matters. It's so good. It's so Sam Keithy.
Yeah, it's the most stylized Batman. I love the symbol is literally just like a squiggle, like kind of line.
It looks like Sam Keith's like little signature.
But it's like basically like he gets drawn into the world of the Max. Like when first Batman sees the Max, he's like this homeless man. And then like it's like the guy, he's talking to some guy and he's like, you're getting drawn in. And then before you know it, he's in the outback and they're having an adventure.
Yep.
That's cool. And
now there's like a Dr. Hugo Strange archetype. I don't know if it actually is Strange or who it is, but he's like doing experiments and maybe all of the villains are getting into the outback and you don't really know what's going on. It's crazy.
Yeah, because it is really called Batman the Mask Arkham Dreams. So
the Max.
You can expect to see. What did I say?
The Mask.
The Mask? Why did I say that?
I don't know. Okay.
The Max.
All that matters is Sleepwalker these days. It's all the kids are talking about.
Number one.
You can't go anywhere without hearing news of the new Sleepwalker movie franchise. No. Unfortunately, no one's ever going to care about Sleepwalker.
I don't know. People say that about Rocket Raccoon.
Good point. Sleepwalker, I say that as someone who does actually care about the character of Sleepwalker.
Yeah, it was fun when it came
out. I still like the character. I think it's got legs. I think it's like it's something that they could do something with. And as proven by this.
Yeah, it has
this comic is really fun.
Yeah, it had some new Warriors characters in it too.
Had some new Warriors characters in it, and it has a couple new squish squashes of existing characters.
Yeah.
The two new amalgams, I don't want to spoil both of them, but we should probably at least spoil Man-Thing-Fang-Foom.
Yeah, Man-Thing-Fang-Thang-Foom.
The first appearance of Man-Thing-Fang-Thoom.
Man-Thing-Thang-Thoom.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Yeah.
Really good. And it's just, it's a straight up normal, it's the Hulk one.
What is he?
Well, I'll spoil that one too. It's Little Monster. The Hulk gets squished down with Hank Pym.
Oh, weird.
So the madder Hulk gets, the smaller Hulk gets.
Oh man, that's actually really funny.
Yeah. So
he's tiny.
He's whatever.
Tiny.
These are great.
Monster.
You should read it.
Wow, that was great. I should have got to the last page because I just
should have.
Saw
that's
the
really
Thang
fun.
Thum, and that was where I stopped.
We're totally spoiling it, but I know how few people are going to read this book, and so I want you to buy it. And those are the two cool things.
Yeah, it was cool.
And also there's a lot of Sleepwalker stuff. Like he does the Sleepwalker stuff that you're actually looking for. He goes to the Council of Sleepwalkers in the Dream Realm and all that stuff, and it's cool. And there's tie-ins between Soul World and the Dream World that are probably going to have some relevance later on.
And also Rick Sheridan, the Sleepwalker host, had learned how to make himself sleep. So he's got this ability to kind of like go back and forth between being a sleepwalker and not. And
Doctor Strange taught him to meditate. Yes. That was pretty cool.
Cool. Should we talk about...
Here, you talk about that. I don't think I read that.
So, Justice League, we've been kind of lost with it. This issue is a little more grounded, and it is essentially just... well, it's more grounded in that the moon has blown up and Superman is putting it back together piece by piece. And somehow Batman has broken everything in his entire body and is in a full body cast and is directing the reconstruction of the new Bat Moon, which is literally in the comic.
Bat Moon.
That said, awesome. It's a nice character driven where it's just basically like... there's a Wonder Woman Aquaman scene, there's a Martian Manhunter Hawk Girl scene, there's a cafeteria scene with all the, they're establishing that the Hall of Justice is like kind of anyone can go there, so it's like the Smithsonian if like Swamp Thing was like eating lunch next to you. It's kind of weird. There's a million cameos in it. I didn't hate it. It was I've been fairly lost. This one mentions like the overall conflict, but it's like in a sentence, so you're just kind of like, oh, that's what they're running around about in the other issues.
Fair.
Anyway, whatever. Not all Justice League 9 was what that was.
Okay. Death of the Inhumans number 4. Haven't really talked about this series because we've been kind of slow in the uptake because it was an Inhuman series. It just really didn't get many, and then Denny Coates really took off and everybody loves him, and it turns out that it's a really good series. We keep restocking the number ones and number twos. Just pick it up.
It's popular?
In trade. Yeah, we just keep selling out of it and then keep restocking it because Kate's doing it. So
Is that the Cosmic Ghostwriter Donny Cates? Got it.
And so because he's doing it, everybody was like, oh, wait, I need to read this. And crazy shit keeps happening. Like, I mean, some terrible things. Like, we lose Lockjaw in this series. No big spoiler there. Which, you know, if you're going to kill a dog in a series, especially one like Lockjaw, somebody's got to know ahead of time. So I'm telling you. No, like going in and not knowing that the dog's gonna die.
Yeah, that's a good trigger. It's essentially like
that's a trigger warning for everybody that's ever had a pet. You know, it's like motherfucker, don't kill the goddamn dog.
Like the first issue of Weatherman.
Exactly, and but in this case,
we will spoil cruelty to animals.
Exactly, any of that,
we take a stand.
Yeah, but in this, you do get Beta Ray Bill going batshit because somebody killed his friend the dog. And so he doesn't really like the Inhumans, but he's going to put his hammer through the head of anybody that messes with Lockjaw.
Nice. Yeah, I flipped through it. It was interesting looking.
It's great. It's been great. The story, some crazy things happened. The last issue of this, essentially, you had Blackagar Boltagon, Black Bolt, with his... they'd operated on him and taken out his voice box, so he could basically only whisper now, and he can't use his amazing ability.
So
now we have this Black Bolt that's wandering around the halls of this place after he escapes, whispering into guards' ears until they melt. Basically,
wow.
Like melting them from the inside out with his little whisper. It's fucking awesome.
That's cool. Yeah, there was at the end of this, I remember there was like a thing with like the mystery of the Inhumans that are going missing.
Yeah. It's good. It's real good.
Should we move on to Poser number 2?
Poser number 2.
Poser number 2.
Poser's great.
Continuing the story of Poser number 1. It's the second issue of the miniseries, and I really like this one.
Yep.
It's really cool. I had the pleasure of meeting the artist in your store, and he was a very nice guy. And this...
He's a good dude.
...is essentially just like a teen slasher movie in comic book form, and it's really well done.
And yeah, that's probably gonna go the way of the movies. So keep your eye on that one.
Okay, all right.
And Shatterstar.
Shatterstar.
Oh man,
you
Shatterstar
read more
number
of Shatterstar one. Than number I one
love
than
Shatterstar.
I
did. Okay, so
I like
for
Shatterstar.
So for me, it felt a lot like Marvel said, "Hey, we did really well with Hawkeye. We did really well with She-Hulk." Making these two like kind of outsider characters work. Let's just kind of combine those two concepts together. So it's sort of like he's running, he's a landlord of a building And he has like wacky space people that live in this, you know, like
he does.
Different dimensional anomaly type people living in his building. And it's fun. And it's, he's just kind of like, he's low to the ground, kind of like, he's not being a superhero. He's just being kind of a dude, and it's fun. And I, man, I love it. I can't wait to see where it goes.
Yeah, it was cool. Kind of had just like a urban vibe. Like Richter is briefly in it as a supporting character, but all the supporting characters are typically the people that live in his building. And then there's like kind of cool flashbacks. This like kind of 90s style flashbacks by a different artist, kind of throughout. So it's well presented, well put together, cool, fun issue.
Yeah, and I would say
Shatterstar.
I'd say if you are missing Peter David's X Factor and that was like your favorite thing ever, which a lot of people would probably say it was, this is the book for you. I'd say this is the one to come back to because this feels the most like his run.
Well, he's the most responsible for the kind of current iteration of Shatterstar and giving him, like, as Peter David was known for, giving them more personality than they ever had before he wrote it. And because he would pick up blank slate characters that just like, oh, here's someone that nothing has ever happened with that has, you know, and he would find a cool take on it and run with it. Definitely a voice that's missed currently, and I loved a lot of his comics back in the day. I'll talk briefly about Weapon H number 8, which is not a series I read, but it stars Korg from the Thor movie, and I like Korg from the Thor movie, and so I imagined Korg running around in Weird World fighting things on the back of an armored bat, and I didn't have to imagine because there were pictures of it happening in the comic.
That's, yeah, I mean, this is the most important thing that happens here is that we get the characterization of Korg from the Thor movie,
yeah,
where Korg has been just kind of a, he was kind of like Elizabethan, right? Or was he stupid? He was one of the two.
He was kind of was a generic, like, I from other world.
He was movie.
Hulk. He was in Planet Hulk.
Movie Frankenstein.
Yeah, he was in Planet Hulk as a support, as one of the, what are they, the Warbound?
Yes, the, yep.
And then when they basically adapted Planet Hulk as the Thor movie, they brought that character over. There's a couple other characters from the Warbound that are in the
yeah.
Because there was a scene, there was one issue of Planet Hulk where Thor fought him, and so they basically just took that and made it into the movie, but they just had it centered on Thor.
And also in Journey into Mystery, Thor fought him as well.
Oh, cool.
Like, way back.
Oh, yeah, he was the first, his race.
Oh, yeah, he fought those rock people and then just shattered a bunch of them, and it was like, oh.
Yeah, it was literally
like murdering all these guys.
It's actually kind of a funny aside, that first Thor comic where it's like this mythology, but like it's totally about space aliens. Like, it's like they just basically were like writing all these monster comics, and they were just like, okay, in this one at the end, he's just going to become Thor. And then, like, you know, it's weird. It's like of a piece with those other things. So it's like the monsters from Planet 12 or whatever.
Right.
It was that race, the Korgians. The Korgies.
Some micro Korgs.
The Korgies. Oh, the micro Korgs. I like that.
Here. This is all you. Yeah, this is all you. Talk about Nightwing.
Well, I'll talk about Batman and Nightwing because they're both out. Batman 56 and Nightwing 50. And basically, I don't know how much people... I assume everyone reads the internet, but I'm just not going to spoil it anyway. The bad thing happens, and then it's a new direction for Nightwing that involves him not knowing who he is.
Did you say new direction?
There is a giant, no erection, but there is a like a lot of like beefcake style, like ab-filled shirtless Dick Grayson art in here. And it is, but there's then also these like flashback ones by Klaus Janson that are awesome. And then the Batman story is you find out the thing that's bad that happened. And also for some reason he fights Kanto from the New Gods, which is kind of fun. Because Tom King does really good with the New Gods. I'm not sure why he's in Batman, but I didn't spend a lot of time with these. But they're super.
Okay, moving on to The Lollipop Kids number 1 from Aftershock Comics. This is one of those books that like should be straight up my alley. It's basically the Runaways with monsters.
Yeah.
I didn't dig it. I tried my damnedest.
What was your issue with it? Because I'm curious if it was the same as my issue with it.
Honestly, it was just, it was something about the presentation. Mm-hmm. There were issues. I did get drawn out by, this is terrible because art is art and it shouldn't matter. But there's something about a certain technique with Cintiqs that bothers me. Hmm. And it's something that Howard Chaykin has fallen victim to, where he has one brush that he uses over and over again. And so now all of his stuff, when it's shaded, you can tell because it's, the brush only does one thing. Mm. And so he uses it a lot. And this, I'm noticing the same types of shading. Just it's a coloring issue. The art is totally fine for me. I do not have a problem with the art. There's just something, and that's really stupid because that's just a very like nitpicky, dumb thing that my brain does when I see it, because it takes me out of it. I like organic art. I wish everybody would just stop using Cintiqs entirely, but I say sitting in front of mine.
Yeah.
but I make dumb t-shirts with it, so yeah, that's different.
So the thing that for me is like, it had a very kind of Stranger Things sort of like generically similar to that. But what made it really remind me of that was that it's essentially like a kid's book, but with adult language. And so it kind of like,
which like, I just works for not, me sometimes.
Yeah, I'm just not the audience for it. It's not like,
because
there's
Stephen
nothing...
King to me feels like that sometimes, where you're like, you feel like Stephen King at his best sometimes is writing something that's like The Goonies, only the stakes go infinitely higher and you know, the horror is much more real. There's something about that, like feeling that you're in some sort of childhood dream that can be very effective. And I feel like this, and honestly, I think the reason that I'm like kind of like hyper examining this one is because I was so close to really liking it. Mm. And I'm probably going to give it a shot for the next issue too, because
I think it's a strong start because
it's got something, there's something there in the core of this. It's
Dungeons and Dragons, kind of like the cartoon.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Like it's like, especially like this. So basically what it is you're following this one
I think
one
I'm
girl.
Liking it more the more I talk
the
about
more
it.
The more I talk about it. This girl is kind of like living in the city and she's going through her life, and every once in a while things get kind of weird and there's a lot of internal monologue, but then she's attacked by a werewolf and a bunch of super like magically powered other kids show up, and then she realizes that she is part of a network of they're bound by, like, so like her ancestry is like part of this world, and she's a lollipop kid is what that's the name of the comic. So, but it was, I liked the art. I can get what you're saying about the coloring for sure. I felt like the splash page was drawn by a completely different artist, but it was definitely like intriguing first issue. But I just, the language thing for me was just like, it didn't work in the same way that, like I read, so one of the ones we didn't get a chance to talk about last week that was out that I loved was Gamma number one, the new Gamma number one.
Oh my
so
God,
I had the
that's
first
so
Gamma.
Good.
It's like, this comic is like a cross between like Pokemon and like, Commandy, Last Boy on Earth.
Yeah.
It just has amazing art. Yeah. It's also really like detail. There's a lot of tiny panels and tiny words. So it's actually kind of it's a chug to read it. Like you don't, it's hard to read it.
It feels like Boy Genius almost. Like it's got a little bit of that kind of feel to it.
I wanted it to be bigger. Like I wanted it to be treasury sized, and I would have been it would have been so much easier to read. There's this really funny thing right on the front page where they've got all the swear words are crossed out with a black bar. Mm-hmm. And then there's these little headers that are underneath this is like a sentence where there's like a swear that's taken out. And then at the bottom, it's like, you got to take the fucks and shits out of the comics with a black bar. It's like, it's just so funny that they censored it. And then they had that one tiny little panel that said that. It was super classy. I liked that. Anyway, that was a copy that came out last week, and I'm sure you still have copies of it.
I do.
I know it was one of the ones like you. I know you like it.
Yes, I definitely ordered a lot of this.
That's Ulysses Farinas.
Ooh,
he is awesome. I like that guy.
Okay, speaking of people I like, let's talk about Eric Powell's awesome comic, Ooh. Spook House
Kid comic for horror kid comic.
Yeah, this is this one is the second, I guess, collection is going to be. I don't know why they called it two. I guess it's issue six, probably, but whatever. Spookhouse, the first series was one of my favorite comics, like almost period. It was so, so strong. If you are somebody like me that misses the days when Bongo would take the best comic creators in the world and say, here, do a horror comic for The Simpsons. Mm. That's what this is. Where it's kind of fallen in the last few years. They were like, people will buy a horror comic from The Simpsons no matter what. So fuck it. We'll just put whoever on it. Don't care. But this has really strong creators. There's an amazing Swamp Thing parody in this where the artist is just killing his rights in impersonation. Mm-hmm. It is beautiful. And the splash of what's the name of the thing?
Crud Kid. There's also Mega Ghost.
Oh yeah, that's coming out soon.
Oh, that's
too.
An ad, sorry. Yeah, Crud Kid was cool. It's a kid that like falls into the swamp and becomes a Swamp Thing style, but he's got like the art is definitely
it's so good.
I liked that. I liked the Haunted Ghost go-kart as well, and there's a couple other stories in it. This was fun.
It's a fun kids comic.
Yeah, I didn't and I should have realized that it was like literally for kids, but I'm so used to that there not being horror comics for kids that I didn't immediately assume that. So I was like reading this horror comic and I was like, why doesn't anything actually bad happen to anyone? Why is it just kind of spooky? But then I figured it out, and I actually it is great. And really like it. And your Bongo comics analogy is totally on point.
It's so fun, and the original I could not recommend enough. Not to say that this is in somehow weaker, but we have the trade for the first five issues and you should totally pick it up.
Nice.
It's just super fun. Right down to all of the Eric Powell does like full page ad parodies for stuff from old 60s horror comics and does just very cool stuff.
Nice.
There was a really cool Black Dragon martial arts. He does a really good parody of that.
Oh, nice. So that's a good one.
Only the Black Dragon karate guy is a baker. It's really awesome. It's really cool. Good. Awesome. Excellent. Read it. If you like spooky stuff that's just like fun spooky stuff, read it.
Excellent. All right. So I have Typhoid Fever, Spider-Man, number one. This is a crossover of Typhoid Mary, the character, from Daredevil, and she is setting people on fire left and right, and the next one will be called Typhoid Fever X-Men, and it has the X-Men in it.
Oh, so that's what, okay. I didn't really follow what was going on with that.
This is out of left field. I have no idea. Like, is Typhoid Mary going to be in some TV show?
Yeah,
I
think she's showing up in the Netflix universe, so in one of those things. She's either... I haven't been paying attention lately.
So Typhoid Mary and then every comic that they have that sells lots of copies as a crossover.
Okay, everyone, Asgardians of the Galaxy is back.
What? Oh, so, Asgardians of the
Galaxy number two. I love this book. Maybe no one else does. It does not sell at my shop. Like, it's sad.
I can't say I was super into it.
Really?
No, I don't know.
Maybe I'm only into it because it's got Frog Thor. Maybe it's
I think that might, if that is a reason.
And if this is the end of Frog Thor in this issue, then this comic can go straight to hell.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've read two issues now. Thunderstrike looks... I think they need a better artist on it, to be honest.
Really?
Like, nothing negative. Like, I can't draw that good, but I don't know. I just don't like the art.
I like the art. I enjoy the story. I mean, this is fun. This is my kind of book.
The idea is fun for sure.
And, but again, like I said, there's at least a fake out of Frog Thor's death in this. And if that's the case, straight to hell with you.
Yeah, this is an Infinity Wars tie-in. So if you are getting all of the Infinity Wars tie-in...
Yeah, but to be fair, I have a feeling that the next issue he's going to explode out of a god's stomach. And
that would be neat.
So or so.
Did you read Adventures of Super Sense?
My goodness, I did not.
I did not either. There's a new Super Sense. Number three is out.
Yeah, again, that's another fun comic. That's just if you're looking for your superhero stuff to just be fun, this is a bunch of kid versions of all the supervillains fighting. I mean, come on.
Yes.
Fuzzy Lad?
Fuzzy Lad.
Is that
Shaggy Man?
The Shaggy Man is like the Shaggy Lad or Fuzzy Lad.
We had the first issue of Edge of Spider-Geddon, the superior. Oh, so this is an Edge of Spider-Geddon. It's not a new series. It's just a one-shot. Is that right?
God.
I don't know. It says Edge of Spider-Geddon. Maybe it's a new series that just ties into it.
I feel like...
I can't tell.
Yeah. No, I think this is a one-shot.
One-shot of Superior Octopus.
Yes.
Number one. So it is Otto Octavius in a body cloned from Peter Parker.
Correct.
But instead of being a Spider-Man, he is an Octopus Man.
Yep. That pretty much sums it up.
Did I get it? Did I nail it? I think it's technically, this would be a continuation of... So Spider-Geddon... If you are like me in any way, you spent the day unemployed and watching the Spider-Geddon trailer on YouTube a bunch of times. That movie looks amazing. And I think this Edge of Spider-Geddon is like maybe kind of like, hey, look, there's comic versions of all of these cool ass characters that are in this cool ass movie that's going
to
come out.
Yeah, this is all just a lead up to this to say, hey, look at all the crazy characters.
Look at all the different Spider-Mans we got. So there's that. There were two what ifs, one of which I understood.
What if Flash Thompson became Spider-Man?
That was a question.
And the next question is, of course, what if the X-Men?
101, a bunch of ones and zeros. Yeah, like it's what if the X-Men, a bunch of ones and zeros.
And if they did, boy, I can tell you it's not going to be very exciting.
I couldn't tell if that was two different stories.
I'm sorry. I just pictured the page of Wolverine. He's got like gigantic eyebrows over his eyes or something.
Yeah, no, there's this like at the end of it, there's this like manga-esque version of the X-Men that shows up. This honestly, it was a real puzzler. So the Flash Thompson becoming Spider-Man is exactly what you imagine a comic that might be. And I'm a fan of what-ifs. I like Exiles, I like What If. And this what-if was really hard to figure out, but it centers on Cable, and then halfway through it just becomes like Ghost in the Shell. Like the art style completely changes to this pseudo like manga, like Domino in a white suit just like shooting robots. And then there's another, it flashes back into the old art, and then it goes back to the manga X-Men art, and then there's this whole thing of the X-Men, and it's like so weird, including Wolverine with weird eyebrow sunglasses. And then the last, I want to know what it is, but literally the cover of this is the story, is called What If the X-Men Were 101010101 System Error. I don't know what the question that's being asked.
I do kind of wonder what the name of this comic was originally.
What if X-Men number one, December?
Yeah, that's it.
I'm going to look. There's got to be a title.
We don't know what the actual question is. But okay, here's my next what if. This is a new what if called What If the X-Men Had Continued to Be Written by Chris Claremont.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
This is X-Men Black Magneto. Really, it's just, let's erase the last, I don't know, 30 years of continuity and just continue writing like Claremont's was the last X-Men, and it's fun.
Marvel has been paying Chris Claremont to not write X-Men comics. Literally, this is not a conspiracy. Like, they pay Chris Claremont, and then they don't have him write anything.
Right.
So he's, like, on salary, but he doesn't, like... So this is Chris Claremont writing a Magneto story, but it's, like, because he's writing it again, it's, like, every comic that came out in between when he stopped writing it and when he started writing it again... just didn't happen. So it's like, if you are a fan of that interpretation, the classic interpretation of Magneto, it's an interesting story. It doesn't really do anything super new, but it's just kind of like a spotlight Magneto, like kind of philosophical. There's people that it talks a lot about, it's centered around the displacement of immigrant families, and then some rednecks are like, "Who do you like those foreigners?" And then Magneto is the guy they're taunting. So you can imagine maybe how that works out.
They kick Magneto's ass royally. It's very sad.
For some reason, that crowbar just like he couldn't do anything about it.
It was a plastic crowbar.
Plastic crowbar that he couldn't, had no metal particles. Did you read Errand Boys?
I didn't read Errand Boys.
I read Errand Boys. Errand Boys was a number one from Marvel, or from Image. And it is very, 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 very 1990s looking. And it is kind of like a Han Solo type guy that is smuggling stuff. And it might be someone's cup of tea. And it didn't look, you know, it just not really my book, but didn't look bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Check it out.
Blackbird from Image. Sam Humphries and Jen Bartel.
Interesting.
Yeah. This speaking of things that aren't really my book.
Yeah. This is not my book.
This was definitely not written for me, but this is not, that is definitely not to say that this is not a book that someone is not going to love, because this is, it is very well done. It has great art. It's very well told. I think that this is going to be awesome for somebody out there.
Yeah,
I think probably the, you were saying Gem and the Holograms.
Well,
type.
I mean,
I would say the Zodiac Star Force kind of stories.
Sure. I was going to say, and now I can't think of it.
Wayward.
Wicked and the Divine.
Gives me a Wicked and Divine vibe. It gives me a bit of Steven Universe vibe even.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be somebody's cup of tea.
Yeah, it's like just a teenage character that's discovering magic in the world really exists.
Yeah.
And then the consequences left over from that. Another number one. So we just have a few number ones from Image to round out the number one, massive pile of number ones. Juke Joint number one. You can say more about this than I can.
Here, let me say something about this. I like the idea. This is... It's interesting. This was built up as like kind of a bit more than I think it is. It's just basically you get some people who are running a juke joint, essentially a small like jazz club, blues house in the middle of nowhere, and there are ladies hanging out there who are just, you know, not necessarily prostitutes. But then people are treating them as though they are, and then that's when things go bad, because essentially I think they might even just be there to, you know, to be disrespected by accident, and then the woman can have an excuse to kill the men or something. Essentially she's luring these men to their deaths if they cross a line in the juke joint. And then she's either part alligator, or she loves alligators, or there's some things that aren't necessarily explained, but like, again, I can't tell. I mean, obviously she has to feed her girls, she says at one point. So I'm assuming the whole point of the thing is to lure people to their death.
Hmm.
But she does only do it to douchebags. So
nice. If you're gonna, the Punisher model.
The Punisher model, you know, if you've got to feed your alligator ladies, do it
alligator
with
lady,
jerk faces.
Alligator lady.
And they very specifically go very far out of their way to put a trigger warning at the beginning to be like, hey, listen, there's some domestic violence, sexual harassment, sexual assault, and some other things that are topics in this book. I don't feel like there really are. I feel like that's kind of glossed over for the,
it's
to
like
just be like, something might have happened, and then they just fucking kill him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think the trigger is for topics. So,
oh,
like,
fair.
Like, just like, even if it's not visually depicted.
Nah, because I'll tell you, dude, the dudes don't last long. It's a great kind of like horror story. It feels like more like a Tales from the Crypt issue than it does like an ongoing story. But if it does turn out that these are alligator ladies, then I want to know a lot more about this, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, because you need something to fill the hole of the Sexy Pig Lady comic.
I know. Where is Sexy Pig Lady?
Actually, it hasn't been that long since the last issue came out.
Oh, damn.
Another final number one from Image. Jerry Duggan, John McCrae, Dead Rabbit number one. This is a crime / stabby murder story about a killer named Dead Rabbit who killed some people and then now is back to kill some more people. And the story is about why.
Cool.
It was cool. I liked John McCrae a lot. So it was cool to see the design of the Dead Rabbit character is really cool.
Yeah.
And it's just the first issue, and I don't want to say too much about it other than that's basically what it is.
Yeah, it's. I feel like it's going to be... There's not a lot to talk about. I feel like next issue is probably when we're going to know whether it goes anywhere.
Yeah.
Sure. Tony Stark, Iron Man number 4 is out. Yep. Again... This is a fun Iron Man book, but nothing too special to talk about.
Yeah, no, it was just an issue of Iron Man came out.
Just kind of an issue of Iron Man. The Dreaming continues to be awesome.
Yeah.
Dreaming number 2 is out.
Cool art in that.
Really cool. This is, of all of this stuff, as I've said before, of the Sandman universe stuff coming out, the thing that I care about the most is The Dreaming, and I'm so happy it's back. I have always loved this series, and you know what? I could read this forever. So stoked it's back.
I like how they draw the pumpkin man. He looks good.
Merv looks great. Honestly, I love the art. Yeah. It feels so Vertigo in the 90s, like except a little bit better. It's like it feels like the best art of the Vertigo 90s.
Yeah, I feel like actually a lot of Vertigo books never had art this good.
That's the thing is that like it gives me the impression of that like Michael Zulli type artwork, only it's a little more finished.
Yeah, like Sandman always had like, but even Sandman had like just the production of the day was different. Like even it's, some of those artists, like Sam Keith was an artist on Sandman, right at the beginning. Yeah,
the art,
but his art doesn't the look coloring very looks different bad. If it came out today. Yeah,
the coloring is bad on those books, and I hate to say that to any poor colorist who had to work with markers and all those layers and all that stuff.
That had to have been but, like a line wide decision because they all were colored. Like someone described it in the day as being just colored various shades of mud, and I don't remember who said it, but someone said it, and that's just basically the perfect description of all the early Vertigo books. They just look brown.
It's so funny because I remember reading when I was reading Sandman in the old trade versions in the regular prints. I remember thinking how bad the coloring looked and how the art was really unfinished looking, and it looked like kind of shitty. And then I got it in the really expensive, that one over there on that top shelf, oh, nice. The big like Bible like tome, and in that like digitally recolored version that's slightly blown up. My God, the art looks totally different.
Totally different. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Is it totally recolored?
I think it's almost entirely recolored. Yeah. I think it's all digitally fixed
or because touched up. Yeah,
it certainly does not look like, you know, 4 Prismacolors.
That's cool. My one pipe dream is that I really wish the last a couple of the last 10 issues of the Invisibles could be redrawn. There's a few issues where it's like I know from reading about it that like there's like stuff in the script that like the artist like just didn't draw.
Batman the Cult, I would pay.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
So much.
Yeah, you've talked about that before.
I just want a black and white version of Batman the Cult.
Yeah.
Honestly, anything Bernie Wrightson ever did, I'd like to see it redone with a current colorist.
The first, the one that actually would strike me as like the hardest to get into because of the coloring, but I did eventually get super into it, was Sandman Mystery Theater.
Oh yeah.
Like that one, the coloring always like really threw me off because it was hard to like see visually what was happening as
right.
much as
and
you could follow
one.
Like and that was such but they ironed it out so like when you look at like the Hellblazer run that started Vertigo, which was the Preacher creative team, I think, Ennis yes. and Dylan, and yeah. then like the even before that, just like the coloring on it, but like when you look at the Sean Phillips Hellblazer issues, the coloring is like so much like Matt Hollingsworth came in,
yeah.
and that was the first time I remember his name and being like, anytime this guy colors a comic,
yes.
it's good. And he would do different Vertigo stuff or different superhero stuff. It was always really good.
Yep.
And then you see the growth from that, and just like what those guys are doing today. And
yeah, absolutely. And whoever is it? Do you think Jay Lee colors his own stuff?
I don't know.
Probably. All I know is that the Jay Lee covers for the Sandman stuff, I love his coloring.
Yeah.
It's his coloring would not work for anyone else, but it always looks so beautiful on his stuff. All of the stuff for the Dark Tower books that he did, man, just some of the most beautiful coloring I've ever seen.
For sure. Man, yeah. Art is so good in this book.
And speaking of great colorists, Matt Hollingsworth, especially.
Yeah.
White Knight, the trade paperback, is out this week.
Yes, and Hollingsworth did that?
And Hollingsworth nice. Did that, yeah.
All right, did the color.
He did, obviously, yes, Sean he did. Sean's book, we have a gajillion copies of the trade. Awesome. Cool. Yeah, it's so cool. Good.
It'll be really neat to read that as one whole story.
It's really fun. It's really interesting. It's very different. And you know what? Fuck. No, New York Comic Con's this weekend. I won't spoil what's going on. We'll talk about it next week. But there's an announcement at New York Comic Con that you'll want to hear. You'll never imagine what it is. It's a total secret. If you follow his Twitter, you'll never know what the hell he's up to.
Oh, yeah. But I already know what it
exactly.
is.
Exactly. So
I think it's on the internet.
I think it's pretty much all over the internet anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Oh, you know what? No, it's
what I think it is.
Well, okay. So yes and no. We'll spoil that. So there is going to be a Dark Knight 2, and it has White Knight 2, and it has Azrael.
Yes,
in it that, featured prominently.
That is what I know.
So that's the one thing that's been on the internet. That and there is going to be an announcement at New York Comic Con next week. So once that announcement gets made, we'll talk about that thing and what that means for us and what we're going to do and some other stuff, and it's going to be awesome.
Cool.
All right. So
piqued my interest.
So thanks, guys.
Yeah, and there was other, you know, also there was an Exiles trade. I think there was a stack of other. I didn't really look through the trades.
Finally, they reissued the Tomb of Dracula omnibus.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which if it completely basically, forgot that. I'm gonna give that trade until Friday. If no one picks it up, it's mine.
Nice. That's all Gene Colan.
Yeah, it's the $100 big ass hardcover, yeah, the one that's like the
out of my price
the
range.
Crush a rat kind of yep. tome.
Yeah, I have a hard time reading the ones that have the spine that's that thick, but that's one of those books that like, oh man, all of them together in one. That's cool. It's a great run. That
Marvel's
has Blade and
yeah.
Hannibal King and Dracula and his daughter.
Ooh, we got a first appearance of Blade in last Ooh. Week.
You had so many you have so many like random loose dollar issues just like kicking around that I saw. I bought 3 issues of Thor.
We have
from the dollar bin. There's a bunch of weird Bible comics.
We bought a collection that was so big that we now have a bunch of Silver Age and Bronze Age stuff in our dollar bin. Because we don't know what to do with it all. There's just so much stuff.
Wow.
So our dollar bins got real good. And we got...
I didn't even really look.
We got some really good stuff that's going to be going out into the bins. We got a ton of Silver Age Batman that's going out.
Oh, man.
You know, we had to pay for the run, so we did send a couple of things to auction that didn't hit the floor. I'm sorry, everybody. As much as I would have loved to have waited for somebody to be like, I'm going to pay you for the first appearance of Batgirl, that needed to go out as quickly as possible. So
yeah,
apologies.
Sure.
But because we spent a lot of money on these. Yeah. But it's a great collection, and you're going to see a lot of cool stuff going into the bins. Lots of Silver Age. We got some cool pre-code horror. It's beat to crap.
Oh,
but
nice.
It's like,
I love beat to crap but pre-code like, horror.
We're talking like some black magic, some real good stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, check us out. Come in and breeze through the bins because I'm gonna be pulling out long boxes out of our storage bin, and just going through them and pricing them one at a time.
Oh my god! If you need help, I'm unemployed.
Perfect.
I'd be happy to look at comics for a chunk of the day.
Awesome.
But yeah, I was just in the shop and we're waiting to grab the week's books and plow through them for this. And I just grabbed a few from the top of the, like I literally didn't even look through any of the bins. There was just some, like someone had, and there was a few like left on top. And I grabbed a couple old Simonson Thors that were like really cool, or they're actually Sal Buscema and Simonson. But anyway, I won't digress. There's just like, there was just sitting on top. There was like, what? What is this weird Christian comic about penance?
Yeah, that's the, those, like, whatever those things are. We get a bunch of those.
Yeah. I was like, this is, seems like it would be worth more than a dollar. It's so old, but,
that's the thing is that we are running out of space. So there's
get some deals.
Yeah. So get some deals. All right. Yeah. So thank you guys. Have a good day, and I'll try not to skip them.
All right.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.